Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. I'm your host, Em Robertson, and I'm so stoked that you're tuning in. Trail Culture is already a year old, and we're on to season two of the podcast episodes. I can't believe how the last year has flown by. Thank you to each and every one of you for following along, listening to the episodes, giving feedback. I really couldn't have done any of this without all of you. As you all know, season two of Trail Culture is fueled by Carbon Endurance. They are an endurance sport consulting company, and they really have you covered in terms of fuel and hydration for all of your performance needs. It's amazing to be able to work with a team who understand athletes, understand the trail space, and are working to ensure that athletes can have their best training and racing performances possible. Really excited about that partnership. Go and check them out. The details are in the show notes. I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and I'll see you back here next week for our next one. Guys, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. We have kicked off season two, and I think we're off to a great start. As I've said before, some really great guests lined up for this season. We've made some tweaks and changes. So for those of you who tuned into the first episode, there were two exciting announcements, one about the Otter Trail, and the second one being that Carbon Endurance and John have come on board just to back and support Trail Culture. So season two is going to be fueled by Carbon Endurance. More on that just now in this episode. Yeah, so John is a triathlete, a business guy, a all-round, I think, overachiever. He's got some amazing, diverse work experience, racing experience. Yeah, it's been so interesting to get to know him and just see, yeah, where his journey's taken him and what he's learned from people. So I think that's what I'm excited to dive into today, is what he's learned, how he's done it, where his sports journey in South Africa is taking him, and what brings this triathlete into the trail running space. So this is John Middlewick. Yeah. Welcome. It's really good to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be in Stellenbosch. It was, unfortunately, the weather decided to greet us with some pretty special weather. Those athletes at Maxi Race, when we were driving home last night, and there was a few of the guys still out there, and it speaks to that trail. You know, we're talking about, you know, trail culture, but it's an incredible type of person in this part of the world, but beautiful place. So thanks for having me.
No, it's so great to have you here. He's getting closer and closer to the Western Cape. He was like in Joburg and now Plett, so maybe eventually we'll get you to the side of the mountain. But John, before we dive into a little bit of what you do, we first love to start with the human. And so you can tell us a bit about who you are. Sure.
Sure. It's always interesting, as we were saying offline, it's always interesting chatting about yourself. But I've grown up in South Africa, so Johannesburg. Pretty much through schooling, I was a swimmer. And when I say a swimmer, I was introduced by my mom to, as you typically do in certain schools, you get into the swimming. And that started my journey, I think, wanting to enjoy sport.
Yeah.
So grew up in Joburg, went through school, went out of school, went into the tech space. Started out trying to be a techie, as they call it.
Yeah.
Loved the engineering side and learned quite quickly that I needed a bit more than just the techie. But stayed in that space and evolved into the hobby side of sport, and that was cycling, and then eventually into triathlon, I think more because it was such a challenge. For me, nice. It was this bizarre, how do you have three sports? Where do you start? And I came through, and I've carried on focusing on the business side because I feel like I'm a business guy at heart. I'm not really sure of, you know, what does that mean, but it's been a fascinating journey of trying to study, learn, work, and even in this space, the last few years of growing my own, you know, business, and that business has evolved. And I think any entrepreneur and you, it evolves into completely different things with maybe a similar core, but different.
I think the whole strategy side, so you've got this tech side to you, a little bit of almost engineering in my brain, and just seeing that, how that plays a role in how you are now, and you've got this problem solving side to you, which we're going to get into a bit more now. So as you said, it's so interesting to see where you start and those skills, and never imagining, oh, is this going to translate into what I'm doing 5, 10 years down the line?
Yeah.
But in terms of the triathlon space, John. So, I mean, you swam at school, and as you kind of got older, you found yourself doing that. Did you have a natural talent when it came to triathlon? I think most people, it's like the swimming is actually the one thing they can't do. It's like, oh, I'm an average cyclist or runner. Let me see if I can add two sports. So you had it the other way around.
Yeah, I had it the other way. And I always, to this day, I always wondered, like, is it a good thing being a good swimmer? Because it's, you know, as a percentage of the races, yes, sometimes. I think what I was good at and what I think it was the problem solving, but I loved the challenge. There's something that I think I've sometimes pushed away and saying, no, I like to be challenged, but having an element of control. And I think triathlon is like that. And it's a huge learning curve. I'm still today, you know, new technologies come out, etc. I've enjoyed that part and learning how far I can take my own little unique body. I always joke with guys, I've got these little chicken legs, you know, that have served me pretty well. But learning about myself and from others, it's something I really enjoy.
Yeah. And I mean, first race, were you somebody who jumped into like the full distance stuff, or did you at least start off with some smaller short races?
So I was the typical in Joburg, the 94.7, you know, cycle race, which, massive overachiever. We used to train on Kailami racetrack.
Okay.
And in my mind, well, I just need to do as many loops as I could, got to a 94.7, and then realized, well, I was way fitter than I thought.
Yes.
And then after that, the first triathlon, someone just said to me, there's a Olympic distance race at there's Germiston Lake. Why don't you come and do it? And I'm like, well, that sounds great. I can cycle pretty well. I can swim pretty well. And I think it was a proper disaster in terms of performance. I mean, I got it all strung together, but the outcome, there was nothing special in terms of performance-wise. Yes. So nothing stood out in my – I think it's been the ability to be captured by a sport, enjoy it, and just be continuously, you know, driving towards how do I just improve a little bit by little bit.
Yeah. And I think the whole endurance sports space seems to have like really sucked you in. But I want to ask you one, how have you kind of transitioned from the triathlon space to, I mean, you were at the maxi race yesterday. I also saw you, or did we meet at George Mike earlier this year?
We didn't meet officially. I think we did a hello.
Hello, heard of one another. But the triathlon space to the trail space, I mean, what differences are you seeing, or how did you find yourself here?
Yeah, I think I started realizing, you know, triathlon, it's an endurance sport. And as I moved into the Cape, you know, just in terms of training, what you find is when you've got access to, you know, less treadmills, less road running, I started gravitating and spending more training time on trails, you know, and off-road. And it just suddenly hooked me. I'm like, wow, this is a totally different dimension that I can bring to my training. And started entering races in a complete unknown. I remember my first, I think Mutt was my first longer trail event.
Oh, no way.
And the gods again decided to bring as much rain as possible the week before and give us, I don't know, half a meter of mud to run in.
Was that 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
Yeah.
It's something grabbed me about that again in terms of the mindsets, the feel around, you know, the race village and setup. And I think that's it's given me a nice avenue to complement. My focus is still triathlon, but it's allowed me to broaden a bit of, I think, enjoyment, because I think that's the mistake people make, is that you can be highly competitive or ambitious, but there needs to be an element of enjoyment.
Yes, definitely. I think you just mentioned it earlier, driving out of the Maxi Race Village and seeing those amazing humans running in 13, 14, 15 hours later on the 75K course in the pouring rain. It's like, there has to be an element of, I love the sport, otherwise you'll just give up. There's no way you'll finish in conditions like that. Yeah.
A part of me when I was trying, I was like, should I stop? Should I ask? Do they want to stop? But you can see there's something about it that, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And you go with it. So
cool. Yeah. I mean, obviously the trail running space is my favorite place to be found. I actually also dabbled in triathlon a little bit, but I've been trying to maintain the discipline of doing all three sports. And I'm just such a fair weather swimmer.
Okay.
Like the winter in the Cape, I remember trying to train for a triathlon and I was like, oh no, swimming in winter is just terrible. But John, I think to carry on painting the picture, I mean, you were in the tech space and then you've transitioned out of that. And I mean, I now know your kind of business and your presence as Carbon Endurance.
Yep.
Did you start there? How did you like find yourself in that space and basically tell the people what you do exactly.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating evolution. So it started again with this passion of wanting to move towards my passion and not really being sure how to do it. I mean, I'd even approached in terms of, you know, Nutra Pharmaceutical or companies in the health space and trying to see, well, is this my thing? And it didn't really materialize. And then the coaching side, I think it was my movement into triathlon, sort of saying, okay, well, at some point you realize I probably need some more guidance because I'm just not improving. And there was an outfit at the time, it was actually called MPG, a gentleman by the name of Freddie Lampert, an ex South African pro, who had set up a very clever model system trying to automate a lot of, you know, the coaching side, you know, the time that takes up a lot of time for individuals.
Yeah.
And over time, I loved what they were doing and got involved and joined the business in sort of a management, you know, minor shareholder in the business. And that's where this love for, I think, teaching, which I've always had. I'd done assistant lecturing back at college and started moving into, okay, this is fascinating. Mm. There's a psychology side to it. And then just started, what's the word, naturally evolving into, well, okay, where does this go?
Yeah.
And carbon endurance became a next step from that when I left that business into, I'm going to carry on coaching, but in a very niche space, more the real personalized, individualized, and trying to go overseas to get a little bit more on the skill set side. I think I'm quite passionate about it, and not to ruffle people's feathers, but these days in South Africa, everyone's a coach. And there's a part of me saying, yeah, I think there's a place for a lot of people, whether it's experience, education, but there's got to be something more to it other than just, I'm a great athlete, so now I should be a coach. Mm. So it's been me trying to, even myself, how do I figure out that journey? Because I'm, you know, I didn't have a background. You have to start somewhere. How do you grow?
Yeah.
So Carbon Endurance was born as almost a small coaching outfit.
Mm.
And moving into, I was like, I have to find a way, technology and my travels, which I'd done in business. I'm like, there's so much technology in the US, Europe. Yeah. And that's where the sweat side, and we'll get into a bit of that. It was a fascinating, I said, we have to get sweat testing in South Africa.
Yeah.
And forget any brands. How do I get this? And it was a journey of literally trying to secure machinery and getting told, sorry, you can't. You know, you're not a doctor. You're not a, you know, you can't get this. And eventually moving into a space of securing the equipment and linking with a company at the time, which was the only company that could provide, what is, if I do a sweat test, what do I do next? What products can I use?
Yes.
And that's where Precision Fuel and Hydration, at the time it was just Precision Hydration, came in. And I went and visited the guys. And it was very clear they were like me. They were great guys. The core of why they were doing this was not primarily to make money.
Yeah.
It was about challenges they'd faced, passions they'd faced, and then sort of how do we move forward?
Yeah. And again, that like, tech side, the puzzle piece, you're trying to fit everything together. But John, when did the nutrition fascination start? So, I mean, it was like you had the coaching side to things and then you found yourself chatting to, I think, is it Andy and the guys from Precision Fuel and Hydration?
Yeah.
I always see their newsletters come through and they like sign it off and I always feel like I'm like having a conversation with them. But at what point did this like nutrition focus come in? Because, I mean, you yourself had some experience, and he won't say it, so I'll say it, at triathlon at quite a high level, walking that journey with people, bringing athletes in. But yeah, I mean, the coaching side is just one element of the whole picture. So yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting point when you raise it, because I sometimes forget that the nutrition side, I'm not a nutritionist. I mean, even coming on the podcast, I was sort of a little bit wary. I was like, I don't want to come across or pretend to be a doctor or a nutritionist. I'm someone that has been working with these types of individuals and technologies that has helped me build a base of knowledge that can help direct people. And the nutrition side is, I think growing up, we were in a family where my mom was very conscious of nutrition, but in a really great balanced way. It was never a like, must do, mustn't do. And we had access to sort of basic fundamentals. And as I went, it stayed an interest. And I think a lot of self-education and being inquisitive to say, what, you know, this, it doesn't have to be one way.
Yeah.
I mean, way back before when the vegan side came up, before it was even a sort of a Netflix thing, I started dabbling, you know, in that to say, I'd always done blood work. I had a fascination with saying, if I do something, I must be able to measure it. Otherwise, how do you know?
And that was just you as an individual, curiosity.
Even my mom and I remember, like, you're a bit nuts, son. You know, you're now in your 20s.
Yeah.
And you're doing blood work every 6 months. You're not sick. It's costing money. I mean, some of it was like, well, I had little jobs on the side, you know, like typical Edgar's, you know, or some little casual labor. And I was doing this. For me, it was just, I had a fascination with what doing X resulted in Y.
Yeah.
And like the vegan journey, and it was a great learning for me in terms of, you know, optimal nutrition. And what does that even mean? It's not about meat eaters versus vegans. You know, there's a great topics on sustainability and all of that. But I think when you boil down to being a little bit selfish, how do I make sure that I as an individual am looking after myself in an optimal way? And we don't always get it right. I mean, I was talking about my Snickers bar fetish. you know, and that's okay too. And I think that's what's led me on that journey of being inquisitive and plugging into people. I can probably come across extremely sort of direct and blunt, but I have this deep yearning, I think, to learn at the same time.
No, I think it's so cool. And your personal journey with nutrition, I mean, getting into from just swimming to going to something like fueling yourself on the long course or the Olympic distance triathlons. Mm. What was that like? I mean, the Snickers bar, I'm like, were you one of those? Did you just start with one in your back pocket and go until you blow?
A quick story. I mean, my first full distance triathlon, it's so clear as day to me. And I used the same training around a racetrack in Kainami. That was my training. I got super lean. If I look back to then, I felt like I was a racehorse. But it was because, first of all, I was under fueling. But it's amazing how even in the sport today, you know, someone gives someone a look up and down. Well, geez, he must be fit.
Mm.
You know, meanwhile, that doesn't necessarily mean that. So it became this a fueling thing. So first, long distance, I remember I had a brand and it said, right, you take one of these every 40 minutes. Which now what I know, that worked out, it was just over 20 grams of carbs. So I was taking probably 20 grams of carbs an hour, which in a full distance or long course triathlon, I got to about 90 Ks on the bike thinking I was just the best.
Yeah.
I had a Casio watch, heart rates.
Yeah.
I was riding with a guy that was saying, John, you know, we need to ride zone 2. And I remember the time saying, dude, you're just, you know, please, you know, zone 2, this is great. I'm strong. I'll see you later.
Yeah.
And I remember probably half an hour later, that was me popped down on the side of the road. And it started this fascination with what I knew worked previously in swimming and in shorter distance was very clearly not.
Yeah.
Not it. So that's I think, started the experience and questioning. So, oh, okay. You know, this is a lot more different. And then going through, you know, hydration, I did some racing in Asia as I got a bit older. And I race well in the heat, but extreme humidity, I started to run into all sorts of weird symptoms that weren't cramping. And I've always put it down to the carb thing. So I became the carb mule, you know, the more carbs, more carbs. And it started turning out the products that I was using, when you started looking at the ingredients and the, you know, the contents, I was like, shucks, I was so way behind on likes of sodium.
Mm.
And that sparked this interest to say, oh, so maybe my performances, you know, could have been tweaked considerably just if I had approached or had understood something a bit deeper.
Yeah. That is so interesting. But I love this like narrative of you, your curiosity and actually asking questions around what am I putting in my body and why. Yeah, I think it's so easy to just go, oh, it's got a shiny wrapper and it's at a race expo, therefore it will be the right nutrition for me. Figuring that out, and even things like the combination of whole foods and your more like synthetic based stuff, your gels, your sweets, all of those things. And I mean, short distance, sure, I think there's a space for just go liquid like nutrition and gels, but on the longer stuff. And again, I think we're seeing actually a combination of this. I mean, if you look at something like basically the Olympics of trail running, which is UTMB, seeing the different race strategies and elites post about it. Like I know Toni McCann comes to mind, and she did largely a liquid and kind of gel based strategy with some Red Bull carbs, all the things. And then there's one photo of her where she is trying to eat rice and the rice just didn't go down, and they just kind of tweaked the plan and kept her on the liquid, whereas other athletes will swear by eating solids in the first half of the race and then transitioning. And I think it is just different per individual.
It is. And I think one of the things I've battled type, you know, we call it like A-type personalities, whatever you want to call it. we don't like being wrong. So what starts to happen, even in my personal best, you don't like to admit that, you know, it is actually your fault or you got it wrong. And you said, well, I had a like fueling. This is my go-to. It works for me. But what's not to say that if I tweaked, changed or did maybe differently, it would be better for me. But we're reluctant to, I think, go through that process and do the process at the right time. You know, do it in the training side. And we all know, I mean, it's the same thing. No, practice it in training. But it's then how do you do that? How do you get the knowledge? Because part of coming on here, I didn't want to come on as a, I am this brand, you should all have my brand. It's to say, no, there are lots of great brands out there.
Yes.
There are lots of great minds out there. Yeah. I mean, something just popped to mind now, like 32GI in South Africa. Mark Wolf is someone that in my life have touched base, but what a genuine, just as an example, an individual that genuinely wants to help people.
Mm.
And so when someone says to me at an expo, you know, I'm using 32GI or I'm doing this,
you go,
that's
great.
I'm not saying, no, I have to convince you to buy something else. I'm saying, unpack for me how you use it.
Yes. Are there still gaps that we can plug, or have you considered a combination of things?
Well, just plant, and I think planting a seed of question. So I try not to come across arrogant, but to say, have you thought of what would happen if you did this, or why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. And in a way that makes the person walk away and say, well, maybe I should look at it differently.
Yeah. This is such an interesting kind of thought that's coming out for me, and I'm realizing it just from a couple of the episodes I've recorded in the last few weeks, is that you mentioned the A-type personalities, but we need to be able to make mistakes, mm-hmm. I think, as athletes, in training and in fueling, and to make the make the mistakes in training, do a session and go, flip, I'm just not ready for that, or that's not actually meeting the demands of the race I'm training for. And the same with nutrition. I think you want to go out and just tick those boxes. And I think there is like an anxiety that comes with athletes who you go out, you try something new. It's maybe not that it isn't working, but maybe it's not going down as smoothly as you thought. And that might not be the actual fuel type. It could be conditions on the day, how much you've slept, when you decided to take that fuel in.
Exactly.
And yeah, I think having the freedom to try and practice and chat to people and actually just invest a bit more time maybe in figuring out the nutrition side.
Yeah. And I like that you said, being okay to make mistakes. And I think look at the flip side of making mistakes allows you to kind of learn and improve. Even in racing now, I still make mistakes. I mean, I had a really big race overseas that was 2 years ago, really hot environments. I got a puncture. I clipped a cat eye and I got stuck on the side of the road for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But I made mistakes in those 15 minutes that I should never have made in terms of fueling. But it set up all sorts of things, which I now look back on little things that I learned, silly things like that. And it's okay.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's definitely okay.
And I mean, it's only, there's a lot of to the sport of like, once you've done it, you'll know. And it's like, nothing works, or I don't know, keeps me away from nutrition that I know doesn't work than trying it and it really not going down well. I had like a thing, when was it? Ultra Trail Drakensberg a couple of years ago. And for a good few months after that, I couldn't touch a far bar for years and years just because I took one in at the wrong time. And and again, you have to try that and also not write things off. I think, I've had people who I'm going through this with quite a couple of athletes who are training for Skyrun and UTCT, and it's all very well that your nutrition goes down and it works like a charm when you're doing a more kind of an easier training session or it's in the early morning. But as soon as you take athletes and you go and do this session at midday when it's, 28 degrees and humid as heck, and you've got like, you're dialing the intensity up slightly, then all of a sudden it's like,
changes. Yeah.
Oh no, it's not working. And I'm like, it is working. Well, you just need to make sure that in those conditions, slightly pushing, towards your threshold and your race pace, that you can adjust accordingly and make sure it does work. Because I just see this all the time where people are like, they practice it in a super like safe way and like your easy sessions, and then they race and they're like, oh, my nutrition went out the window. And we haven't spent enough time at that intensity making sure it works.
Yeah. And I think you hit a key word there, was the ability to adjust. I think part of like what I've learned and what we do and what athletes that we work with, it's how do you equip someone to be able to adjust, how to troubleshoot when something that's worked for me for the last 6 months suddenly doesn't. As you say, it doesn't mean that's out the window. It means, as you say, you have to adjust, and then how?
Yeah. And John, I mean, with something, let's go this way first. You had this fascination with nutrition, you kind of guinea pigging yourself, you were taking in 20 grams of carbs per hour, realizing that's not enough. And then you mentioned you went overseas and you spent some time learning from other people. So yeah. How did that kind of journey evolve and happen? What happened overseas?
Yeah, and that was part of that time where I had left that company that was starting to sort of automate. It was quite funny if I think, but as I'm talking now, it's almost like it was an AI concept of, you know, how do you automate but get a lot of data points in? And at the time we weren't quite there yet. So when I went overseas, and the idea was I went and joined an outfit there, Brett Sutton, who's in the triathlons, it's sort of endurance space. I went and did some training and spent some time in St. Moritz for a couple of weeks. And the great thing there is you're around a lot of different athletes. So you're around a lot of elite runners. And it was just listening to some of the talk and some of the things. I hadn't heard this before. And it sparked a lot for me to say, there are so many gaps. I didn't even know were gaps.
Yeah.
And ended up staying in Germany for a good 2 months and spending some time with some guys, you know, on the cycling side, you know, science and cycling, and trying to just delve a bit deeper into the science of it.
Yeah.
Because as much as I'm a strong, you know, say follow, you listen to your body, but science and the numbers have a place in that.
Yeah.
And how do you make sure one doesn't overtake the other? But that was the thirst for, okay, there is more knowledge out there. South Africa is cutting edge in many areas, but many areas I thought, shucks, I why hadn't I heard this? Why don't we have it here? And that sparked the discussion of with the sweat testing.
Yeah.
How do I start engaging with individuals that are starting to lead the way in other areas?
Yes.
And those trips became about that.
Yes.
And digging a bit more and being that guy saying, shucks, I don't know.
Yeah. But I'm going to find out.
And some of the nutritionists, and you know, there's so much knowledge out there now. And then it became, well, now you've got so much. And even today, I mean, we were talking about ketones, carbs, you know, fat. Sure. Now it becomes this, okay, well, who's right? And I think that's the thing. It's not about who's right. It's about saying, okay, we're looking for an outcome. And for one person, for me, I need enjoyment. I need performance. And I still need to learn. Those are key things for me, but it's going to be different for everyone.
Mm. And I mean, just back on the sweat testing side of things, like take us through that a little bit. Why was that something that caught your attention? And yeah, just a bit of that journey and why it's kind of a focus and even a service that you offer, sweat testing for athletes. Why should we be
interested? It's funny. I mean, even at expos, I mean, to the trail running scene where we've been more visible, you know, at some of the expos, and you can see people saying like, I didn't even know this was a thing. Or someone will say, I've heard it on a podcast. You know, we've had it in country now, the equipment for over 4 years.
Hmm.
It was pre-COVID that we'd bought it in. And the reasoning was just because I'd started to, in these trips overseas, trying to see what people were doing. And you would hear these guys talk about, you know, sodium composition. And when I looked into it, okay, well, this makes complete sense now. I mean, it's, you know, everyone is individual, genetically determined how much sodium someone loses in their sweat. And I'm like, so I want to know. Me as John, I want to know. And I'm like, I couldn't find an answer until I started coming at that time. Equipment, there was certain medical performance centers, specifically in Europe, that had this kit in their labs. And I then said, okay, well, I'm typical South African, you know, we're going to find a way to make this happen. Reached out to the distributors in the US, got all the way to almost purchasing it, trying to figure out how do I afford this stuff.
Yeah.
Basically said, I want to go ahead. And next thing, then getting a phone call from a great gentleman, I think he was somewhere from Europe, and said, hi, John, I'm so-and-so from X, you know, equipment distributor, medical equipment. We can't sell you this kit.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, you know, shucks, I've just gone through all of this.
Yeah.
And this is the only solution. Because at the time, it's conductive testing. It's i.e. being able to stimulate sweat glands using a certain mild chemical with a small voltage. That's the start of how you start the sweat tapping. Yeah. So it's done at rest. And they said, look, a company by the name at the time, it was just Precision Hydration. They have the global rights to this equipment.
Yes.
And I was like so turned off. I was like, oh man, you know, you hear of those brands where it's like you get tied into like a chain of you must buy the toothpaste, you must buy this, you must buy that.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, just be open to it, have a call. And it ended up being, I think at the time with Andy, who was the founder of Precision Hydration. And I was blown away how, first of all, he was wanting to help. And I was like, no, but I want to buy this. And let's talk about why, what, who we are.
Yes.
An incredible journey. He was an athlete that had massive sodium losses and battled, was actually, you know, in the sort of, I would say, the entry level professional space, and went down that rabbit hole and started this company saying similar to what I had done, but had then gone further to say, get a result. Now what do I do? There aren't products on the market that catered for different sodium losses or concentrations. And then realized that this was a company that had been going for some time and had this wealth of knowledge and built data and around athletes. They had been working with high level, started working with high level athletes.
Yeah.
And I jumped on a plane and he said, let's come over, let's talk. And call me crazy, I jumped on a plane, went through, and I'll never forget, I mean, he literally fetched me in the morning for my little Airbnb. He just dropped the kids and we went to the small little office and spent the day with a small team of guys and we did a sweat test. And again, it blew me away that how are we not doing this? And they started showing their clients the teams they were working with. And I was just like, okay, this is a resource for me, because if I become the sweat test guy, that's no good if I don't have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tests behind me, nutritional experts, and someone more that studied some of the science to help me develop the business. And that's where it kind of plugged in. I left with the kit that trip. It did result in me being stopped at Heathrow Airport for a bomb scare exercise through the machines.
Dogs are checking you out. What is this?
Terrible, but part of the process. And that's how it started. It was a sweat test equipment with a product that when I did the test, I could then match a range of what you were losing.
And just for those who maybe don't understand why this is something you want to look at. So again, like why sweat testing? So you mentioned Andy now, he was having like massive sodium loss. So for those, it's salt. But now there's different types of sodium, which John's going to take us through now. I know he is kind of really well versed on this and spent the whole of yesterday telling people about this. But I think so typically you see athletes who, it's like, oh, I'm a salty sweater. I can see it on my clothes, on my skin after a race or a run or a session. And then it's your typical just like, oh, grab a potato, dip it in salt and take that. Or another like very common scenario is, oh, I'm cramping. I just need to take in more salt. And I'm talking about salt as in like table salt, what you can find pretty much in every person's cupboard. So I just want to help us understand a bit more of like what Andy was seeing, what your kind of layman person is experiencing, and then why we need to dive a little bit deeper into this.
Perfect. And I think, stop me, one of the things I found is to try and, I mean, I think the great thing about this format is that people, you know, if you're not a details guy or a science guy, you can just, you know, pass forward, but stop me if it gets, you know, too geeky.
That's great.
I think again, yes, as you're saying, salt. I mean, salt is, table salt as we know it, is sodium chloride. It's made up of those elements. So essentially in table salt by weight, about 40% of that is only actually sodium. And that's the part that in sweat, that is the largest mineral essentially that you're losing in your sweat. And what we now know is, and we've known for some time, is that each individual loses a different amount of sodium. We'll use the correct term sodium in their sweat. And it's largely genetically determined. So looking, you know, us having a chat, there is no way to figure, even the salt on your clothes. So we use that as a primitive way to try and get into ballparks, but that could be for multiple reasons. Yeah. I could have a really high sweat rate, so lots of volume of sweat coming out through my clothes with a small concentration of sodium, but over time it adds up.
Yes.
Then you get someone that has a low sweat rate. So the amount of sweat that they're sort of pouring out through their clothes is actually pretty low, but they could have a higher concentration of sodium
in that loss.
And we've got really good at, we talk about carbs now, like it's this, you know, carbs has its own personality now, you know. You know, what kind of carbs go? Are you 120 grams? That's the latest buzz, you know. Yeah. Are you 60, 40? back in the day, 20.
Yeah.
And we see some athletes going even higher. Who are you? Now, sodium should, in essence, we should be doing the same thing, but it's a lot better because we can say, right, what do you, I lose personally about 623 milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat lost. So we're not talking about how quickly I lose it because that will vary depending on temperature,
yeah,
fitness, all these conditions. But that composition for me, that is pretty much, and it's not statistically and significantly going to change in my lifetime. That would change my actual fueling strategy. So it's great because you can do it once and know. So then you start looking at products to say, okay, but how do I even look at that? And that's starting to pose the question, look at your products.
Yes.
We've said table salt. It's a bit of a bugbear for me specifically in long distance because table salt is the cheapest thing on the planet. And I think we acknowledge a lot of the products we take, actually the composition of it is actually quite cheap to make. Mm. So you hope that there's some knowledge value that comes around it. And where we look at products that are just sodium chloride, over longer distances, that chloride and that acidity that starts to happen starts to affect how the gut's emptying.
Yes.
And we see a lot of people not making the link. So my tummy at 3 hour mark, man, just everything, you know, it had to come up. It wasn't going down. And we start to say, pose the question. It's probably not just the fuel part. It's the electrolytes balance and how that balance can affect the fueling side. We see products like Morton, great leaders in their space on how they've put together products that are really focused around the pH of you need to take their packet in how they stir it because they've almost scientifically worked to say that creates a pH, an environment that will optimize how it's digested.
Interesting.
So it's trying to say to guys, sodium is sodium chloride, table salt. You get your sodium citrates and the sodium carbonates. In the athletic space, we want to get across to guys, you should be using sodium citrates or sodium carbonates because those over long extended periods of use don't create this acidity or this imbalance in the gut.
Yeah. And I mean, putting these puzzle pieces together, John, like, so you've got your liquid nutrition side in terms of what's going in your bottles, and then typically gels are another thing that's used. And we'll get into like pillar performance, but say from the precision fuel and hydration side, what are the typical kind of mistakes that you're seeing people make? Is it just a case of, okay, I wasn't aware that I was lacking kind of the balance between the types of sodiums that there are? Is it trying to take, as you said now, the 120 gram sub carbs per hour is like the buzzword. Is it just trying to do too much too soon? You know, like how, what are the typical things you're seeing?
I think the first thing we're seeing is that the sodium and electrolyte side is still a bit of a gray area for most people. That, you know, it's typically something they have already in their mix. So they're buying a product that has it in it. So they're not seeing it as a separate thing. They're saying, you know, I buy X product and it has some sodium in.
Yeah.
And not trying to see, well, you actually need to understand how much is in there and how that may affect you as an individual. We're also seeing, guys, there's been a bit of a craze, I think, in the last probably year where, you know, electrolytes became the best thing. Now it's like water. Every time you have water, you need electrolytes in.
Yes.
So it was trying to say, no, but let's think about why we're doing things, why we're drinking. So that's probably one of the mistakes we're seeing with people there is to saying, look, actually, in many cases, you shouldn't be taking electrolytes. In the shorter sessions, there's no need to.
Yeah.
Most of our diets, unless you're eating a really low, for a medical reason, a low sodium diet, you know, you just go to Woolworths, you know, from a South African context, and you just turn over some of the chicken and you might see, shucks, there's a lot of sodium in there. And that's typically managing that. So going back to your question, so what are the mistakes? And I think it's trying to, then the nod, you get someone just trying too many things. And then it becomes like any problem solving, what went wrong?
Yeah.
So we start trying to advise guys to, you know, simplify it in some ways. Then simplifying for you and simplifying for me may be two different things. So it's trying to give people the access to, right, these are methodologies or approaches, start trying them, but simplify it. And in many cases, we're trying to say, start thinking about separating carbs and liquids, specifically in the early days of trying to figure it out, well, you know, where am I lacking?
And I mean, it's one thing to know how much, you know, kind of sodium is in something, how that could affect you. But then I suppose that's where the sweat testing results come in. So it's one thing to know this is how much is in a product, but how much do I need?
How much do you need?
As an athlete. And this, I mean, we've touched on this with just everyone being different as individuals. So you have somebody come to you, they're kind of trying to put the puzzle pieces together, they do the sweat test. So how does the sweat test work, and then interpreting those results and making changes, like what does that kind of journey look like?
And I think let's also paint it, because what I've also cognizant of South Africa is that, you know, all this new tech and all the access to new things, you know, comes with a cost. And what we're not trying to say to people is, well, if you can't afford or choose not to spend where you you know, the money that you've earned in the space, there are options to get you into a ballpark. So we're going to cover the sweat test itself, the in-person sweat test, which is a once-off test, but there are other ways. So we'll start with that. That test is the gold standard, which is an in-person, done at rest. You have little electrodes that are put on. It sounds quite, you know, scary, but it's just a mild electrode current with a special chemical, pilocarpine nitrate. And in 99.9% of people, that elicits a response from those sweat glands. And we'll simulate those sweat glands turning on that would be able to be the data extrapolated to use in training or racing. And that's captured in a little microduct in a very controlled, and this is the key word of this process, controlled. Being able to basically capture that sweat and then put it through an analyzer, which essentially is testing the conductivity of that fluid, and then giving you a reading, which is normally in millimoles, which will get converted to milligrams, which you and I can at least use.
Yeah.
The fascinating thing for some of the guys listening that may not have been on listen to other podcasts, in South Africa, the range of individuals that we've tested ranges from about 400 milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat lost as the lowest end that we've tested, to the highest, which was literally lost 2 days ago, which was done by one of our other sweat test partners in the country, to just over 1,700 milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat. So you can immediately see that range is significant. And that doesn't take into consideration the sweat rate, how much the volume of sweat that I lose. Yeah. So that becomes the other side of the coin. And that, with coaches, with performance teams, that becomes a weighing protocol. And we give the guys, you know, nice auto-calculating spreadsheets that over time you can build the sweat rate side of it to say, for me, example, if I'm in above 25 degree weather, I start to lose actually in excess of 1.6 liters an hour.
Oh, wow.
Which sounds crazy for, you know, little chicken leg John, but it is that. But going lower than below 20, I drop really low on the sweat rate side. So it's knowing that, predicting a race, etc. Okay, I'm going to be there. I have to be aware that I have to plan for a sweat rate that is going to be on the high side.
Yeah.
And I can then map how much liquid, and because I know that number, I can then make sure that the concentration of the liquid that I'm taking in matches what I'm losing.
Yeah. And I feel like the feedback from people who have done the sweat test and then make changes must just be unreal. It's like you're starting to understand yourself better.
Yeah, it's a very rewarding engagement. I think the sweat test results is one thing, but unpacking this individualism of hydration and that, I think that's the part that moves the needle. Even if someone, like at the expos, we don't get the sweat test done, just that knowledge of how to approach it, it's a game changer. And people's feedback, it literally is, you'll get a message, an email saying, thank you. It's almost this weird, and I'm like, oh, you don't need to thank me. We've just opened the door to that.
Yes, just and getting that thinking going, why am I doing something like this?
And fortunately, with Precision Hydration and now Fuel and Hydration, they built virtual sweat tests. So what they did is they took the data from the in-person sweat test and the questions you answer during that test, and they then built a virtual version asking the same questions. And they started trying to correlate to say, on average, people that answered these questions, this would be the almost T-shirt size or the range of sodium loss we would expect to see. Mm-hmm. So it's not 100% accurate, but it allows someone like at the expert to say, oh, okay. So based on doing that virtual sweat test, you've got me into T-shirt size medium. And that gets them at least into the ballpark of functioning and operating and training and racing. The next question is, how do I optimize and fine tune?
Yes.
But typically the fine tuning is not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that first, you know, where am I on that T-shirt size, if you want to call it.
Just getting that kind of different thinking going. And I like that it's accessible.
Yeah.
If you're maybe not ready to kind of jump into the in-person sweat test, you can at least start by tweaking. And then, as you said, if you want to go small margin and or just more specific and understanding, you can go the sweat test route. And then, John, I think the I mean, part of Carbon Endurance, so you've partnered with Precision Fuel and Hydration, but that's not the only element to what you do and what you bring into South Africa. And yeah. just like, so what else are you kind of involved in, and how do you make these decisions? As you said, there's so much out there. Mm. There's great products from the guys like 32GI and Morton who you've engaged with, you look up to, and then I'm sure that there's also products on the market that you wouldn't suggest to anyone. So yeah, navigating that space in South Africa.
Yeah, I think when I think about it, it's quite interesting when you raise that, because I think maybe something I haven't done really well is like, what is carbon endurance? You know, because someone listening, I'm like, hold on, guys, you said carbon endurance, precision hydration, you mentioned pillow. What are you? And I'm like, carbon endurance is a sports consulting distribution house. So we are trying to say we're going to bring on products into South Africa, ideally being the lead in the initial days of how do we bring it to market and how do we bring knowledge and expertise in a responsible way that, first of all, helps the brand. So there'll be in most cases an international brand. How do we help them enter the market? And then how do we help the athlete base? Because I think that's the shift as well. They are my customers, but they're athletes. So I try and think of, it's athlete first, and they're a customer of ours. Yes. So in the business there, we have Precision Fuel and Hydration, and now we approached in the last year Pillar Performance, which was a sports micronutrition product. And you asked first of all, it's always testing. It's really getting, an understanding of who they are, how they fit, and does it complement what people are doing? I'm trying to avoid becoming the John says I'm right or wrong.
Yes.
Because that's not what people want. So Pillar Performance now is the sole distributor, and that product lends itself to being possibly more in retail over the coming months. And starting out like in that space, they're triple magnesium. And again, that starts to go down the rabbit hole. Why take magnesium? What is the purpose of it? We go back to blood tests, and it's fresh in my mind because of the discussions of the last few days, and someone saying leading into a race, I start doing magnesium supplementing a week before. And I ask the question, why?
Yeah.
And that person's response was, it helps prevent cramps. And in that case, it's difficult to diagnose it, but you start to say, okay, let's unpack a few things. And I said, have you ever done any blood work to suggest that you're low in magnesium, i.e. like your red blood cells that are holding some of that magnesium? And the answer was no. And my suggestion was it would probably be a good thing in your general blood work to actually see, should I be supplementing with day-to-day magnesium, or am I using it as a performance enhancer or a sleep enhancer for a specific reason? But then I've got to have a company that's engineered the product with that in mind. It's not a Pillar Performance. It's not to say, right, you take this as your vitamin morning, night, middle day, etc. It's to say, no, we're trying to improve your sleep, neuromuscular recovery, and we're trying to educate around how to use metrics to, in theory, measure an outcome. Because if I'm not measuring in some shape or form, even if it's a perceived effort, someone says to me, John, I don't want to measure my HRV. Okay, but then you need to, how do I understand the markers for when I shouldn't be pushing and when I should, or when I should be recovering and not?
Mm. This is fascinating. And I mean, Pillar Performance, you mentioned like micronutrition now. And again, you have things like people go magnesium, it's cramps, and I associate magnesium with better sleep. But even things like the electrolyte side, and there's a couple of brands who I always associated electrolytes with. If you're sick as a kid and you've got a stomach bug, your mom mixes you a jug of electrolytes, they taste terrible, and you're kind of trying to replenish again what you've lost.
Yeah.
So finding the combo of you've worked on what's going into your bottles from a carbohydrate side. You've also got, okay, I'm taking gels in combination with whole food. So the place for electrolytes in all of this, you mentioned now on some of the shorter sessions, you don't need it, but on the longer course stuff, something like Maxi Race yesterday, and again, in cooler conditions, is there still a place for it? How do people kind of figure that out?
Yeah. And I think it goes back to, again, why are we supplementing with electrolytes? And it's on the loss side. So as an athlete, most of my loss is happening through sweat. There's going to be certain other minerals, urination, etc. But what we go back in the race is to say, how much are you sweating? And that's almost what it's coming back to. In cold conditions, we'll use me as an example again to say, in really cold conditions, I might be losing 200-300 mils of liquid in sweat form per hour. that's not much. But as I said, that can ramp up to 1.6. So in that range of how much I'm losing, that's where I'm starting to say that's the place for the electrolyte side. It's to go with the liquid, because it's about fluid balance. And I think we have to remind ourselves that electrolytes are there to manage in the human body. Sodium and potassium are largely managing fluid balance within the cells and outside of the cells, within the blood plasma, and you're managing that. So we're trying to say, if I'm losing these minerals, how do I replace them at a volume that's allowing me, my body, to be in a form of balance or a more optimal state?
Yeah.
That's also not to be say, well, I must be now terrified and say, what happens if I become slightly dehydrated? That's okay to be slightly dehydrated, you know, but understanding at what points that becomes a problem, what to listen to, what to look for, is the main difference. So it's to say to guys, look at why you're doing something. You're using electrolytes, like you said, growing up. It is the same thing. You had runny tummy, upset. You've lost a whole lot of liquid. And in many cases, having lost a whole lot of liquid, you flushed out a lot of those electrolytes. So we're trying to get fluid back in and the electrolytes.
Yes.
And the quantities and ratios is as important as just getting it back in. And those brands that we grew up with, I mean, it's like it burnt into my head, Rehydrate.
Yeah, Rehydrate.
I mean, what a great product that made something, especially in South Africa, accessible to, you know, all demographics. Mm. To say, here's an option that's something that has got a blend of electrolytes that works.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Now, in sport, is to say, we now know that in the sporting context, those amounts can be, what a Rehydrate for a standard tummy bug is not going to be sufficient for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it might be, because you might be in that range of what you're losing in your sweat, that Rehydrate sachet works.
Yeah.
And that's okay too. But understanding, you know, where that comes in. I mean, even like I've got a passion for MMA, you know, it's been a hobby, like just martial arts and how that is.
Yeah.
And you look at fighters that have to, I don't agree with it, dehydrate to make weight.
Yeah.
And then in a very short space of time have to rehydrate. And again, those type of fighters, how are they doing that? They are actually doing sweat tests. So they know in that weight loss or weight cutting, how much sodium have they lost in that cutting phase? And now when they rehydrate, how much do they take in?
Yeah.
And how do they use the sodium to pull the liquid into, in most cases, the bloodstream, the blood plasma?
Yeah. John, one of the kind of final questions on the nutrition side for me is, we chatted about it now with like, not panicking if something, you've tried it and it's maybe not working, to give it a second shot. And you mentioned earlier something that has worked for me in the past, not working for me anymore. Why does that happen? And how would you encourage somebody to just tweak and not kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater?
Yeah, and I think we've almost got to start looking at to say, you know, there's training and racing, and why we train is to prepare for the racing, to prepare the body for the racing. So the scenarios, the simulations, we should be doing that in training so that there is an element of preparation for that. Things not working, and I think why things don't work, there's multiple reasons. There's so many variables that are happening. I mean, what you're taking in, the timing, your status. I mean, we talk about kidneys. It's the same thing, you know, nerves, you know, just in terms of sort of diuretic effects. I think it's being patient with oneself to say, why is it going wrong first? Or have I got any inkling?
Yeah.
And if I don't have an inkling, what are the things I'm going to fall back on to start with?
Yeah.
And what you're going to fall back onto is to say, whether it's your coach or what your knowledge is to say, right, have I been doing, again, first step, liquid intakes. Have I been getting the quantity or range that I think I've been able to
get?
Yes or no. Have I been matching electrolytes with that? Yes or no. Carbohydrates, what have I been doing? What happens when the stomach starts to pool? And the stomach pools for lots of different reasons. I mean, it can be the acidity, it can be too much carbs, it can be different tendencies, but to say, what do I do then?
Mm-hmm.
So I think not being shy to say, there are little techniques that you can follow that can get you back on the road, and then back into training, start to say, okay, let's go back to a little bit of mapping out what I did.
Yeah.
And sometimes the human body, whether we like it or not, we don't understand everything.
Yeah.
And the brands, all the brands, you know, we represent, you have to be careful because you cannot with 100% certainty confirm certain things, but you can rule out and you can say, and I did that to the best of my ability. And let's check the other things. I mean, we speak about ketones. We mentioned that's another product that we've brought on and we're not the distributor for it, but we're a reseller for. There are other implications of that. You know, there's acidity. So now you're bringing other products into the mix that are going to make your stomach environment more acidic. Mm. But the brands will be telling you, you know, many like, you know, these are the positives. So it's to understand there are always going to be pros and cons.
Yes.
You know, same with the sodium, you know, too little sodium, too much sodium.
Yeah.
There are problems with that and how to identify, if possible, what you're experiencing.
Yes.
I'm
seeing this as like a recipe that, because you're adding a whole lot of things, and we've spoken about like kind of your gastric emptying and that environment and the pH and everything. And I think most people are listening and going, I didn't even know I had to think about those things.
And I don't want to in some cases. Yeah.
And it's just to go, it's like, you've got a recipe. There's no one size fits all. It's not just follow like you usually would in a kitchen, but figuring out, okay, if I add too much baking soda in this sense, it's all going to kind of bubble over, or it's not going to rise, or whatever the case is, and making sure that you are listening, I think, to the right voices in terms of like, these are reliable avenues that you can go down to try, so that you're not wasting your time. Because I feel like there's so many options out there. Where do you even start? But it's just, just do a little bit of homework, start with something reliable, and then see how you can kind of mix and match things to suit you as an individual and the demands of your event.
Yeah, and hopefully, like, you know, these type, you know, like what you're doing in terms of the podcast, it's helping position input, say, well, I didn't know that, or I didn't think of that, and equipping you with something to say, okay, I need to improve in an area that maybe I didn't think about before.
Yeah.
And like your training, you know, training is this science. I mean, you on the coaching side, it's, you know, it's not an exact science, but we can follow guidelines and best practices and learn from how I'm evolving and how my physiology is adapting. And I think that's key to people, say, be patient on learning about your own body. And do you have someone like a coach, if necessary, to give you some of that feedback? Because sometimes it's hard to see it.
Yeah.
You know? You think, no, but it must be this. It must be because you're giving me hill reps on a Friday. It's the wrong day for hill reps.
Yes.
You know, but they might be the right thing for you. But there has to be, again, you're measuring an outcome. There has to be improvement. So in this journey of, if we simplify it down, is to say, understand there's a role to play on these certain things. There are markers and metrics that we can look at. And what is the outcome I'm seeing when I make changes or don't make changes?
Yeah.
That's the powerful part.
Super interesting, John. I feel like, there's been a couple of good golden nuggets here for people to think about. And even I'll put all the info in the show notes for you guys of where you can find Carbon Endurance. I know John is someone you can always stop and have a chat with.
Yeah,
and I think you've also built a cool team of people. I'm laughing. The Snickers bar, I think of Matt Bouch. When you said you spent some time training in Asia, I was like, it's Marie. She also spent some time there. And I know you've had kind of positive influence on those athletes. And just a quick story from yesterday. I mean, it keeps coming up, but can you summarize just your conversation with Liam, 16-year-old athlete from Plate, I think he is, that area?
I think they spend a portion of time at Plate. And I mean, that's it's a cool story to bring up. I think that was very organic in that. And his mom was, I'm sure they won't mind us talking about it, but she's it's a mom that's looking at doing I think it's her first 70.3 or half Ironman distance in Vietnam.
Yes.
And that was the start of the discussion. Actually, she was at the table asking and kind of some of the topics we're talking about and saying, shucks, you know, I'm going to be in a very hot, humid environment. I can see you talking about these different things. How do I approach? And it started. And there was this young gentleman, I'll call him a young gentleman because he was there quietly with his mom. Mm. You could see listening. And I suddenly, you know, I could see he had run a kid out there. Are you racing this weekend?
Yeah.
He said, yes. And Marie was actually with me and she carried on the conversation with the mom. And I stepped aside just because you could see when someone's genuinely inquisitive. And we started talking. He'd mapped out a really cool plan for his race. Around different products, timing, and he was asking me stuff that I was saying, but why this, why that? And I'd made some suggestions, and I made the suggestions, I always try to give it with, why am I suggesting that? What's the underlying reason and the mechanics and what's the outcome? And we mapped out a few little tweaks. He'd actually done pretty well. And the next day he raced and he did very well.
He did.
He did very well. He's like me, he's a small guy, but he's a youngster and he was competing against, you know, older guys in tough conditions, I think mental conditions. And he came over to him and he just kind of shared his experience. And you could see this burning passion, and just he had taken control of certain aspects of his race. And I think probably better than I've seen some people have been racing for a long time. And he'd introduced little changes, and the results were, you know, spoke for themselves. But it was great seeing someone that you could see he was proud of what he had done.
Yeah.
And we'd played a small role in that. And listening to his story is super rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing catching up with him afterwards. Like 16 years old, 30K race, and yeah, executing a race plan, not panicking, kind of running within himself, and then going, yeah, I slightly tweaked and changed when I took in certain parts of my nutrition. And again, seeing how happy he was with his own performance, and that he kind of, he ran his race, did his thing, and he's like, it worked. And again, I'm like, he's 16. He's got years and years of racing still to come.
Yeah. So. And again, I'd love to catch with him. And as his journey continues, you come across people in your life, and I'm like, sure. That for a young guy having his head screwed on, his willingness. And I think what was great is that you could see he was taking on board my knowledge, but he was not in this, you know, sort of deer in the headlights. Okay, John's saying, I must do what John says. You could see he was building it into his own little model. And like we were saying, that's going to evolve as he evolves.
Yeah, it's not just like, oh, I have to throw everything out, start from scratch, change it, do what you have to say. Yeah.
And you hope guys like that, in a way, it's probably not like becoming ambassadors. And I actually don't like the term ambassadors. I prefer like partner, you know, you're forming partnerships. And like we've done with certain guys, niche individuals that genuinely care about the sport, first of all.
Yeah.
And have this, whether they are elite professionals or entry-level guys, there's something that you can see that they genuinely want to help other people. And that's the role of an ambassador. You should be helping people, not promoting necessarily, and I'm going down a whole different rabbit hole, but of, you know, here's John, here's the product. I do this all day, every day. It's the best.
Yes.
That's not what we need in the different sports. We need people that are going to call out and say, I used precision fuel hydration, this didn't work. You know, John and I, maybe in that case, one thing, John, that didn't work for me. It was actually terrible. You actually buggered up my race.
Yeah.
But I think we need to have those, and we need people in the social media world like you posing the hard questions. And I appreciate you. You know, you're not, this isn't a difficult discussion. You're allowing me to talk passionately about what I do. But I think we also need to be a little bit more provoking and encourage people to say, to ask the hard questions.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And hopefully that begins a civil dialogue or a debate and something, and we don't have to agree.
Yeah, and I think what I'm taking away from all of this is, don't do it just because it's worked for somebody else.
Yeah.
Engage in dialogue, ask the questions, and then see what does or doesn't work for you. I think promoting this one-size-fits-all thing is damaging the sport, because then you turn up with an expectation for a certain product to do something for you, and it doesn't. And and then you feel, as we've mentioned now, this is taking a lot of time and effort that athletes are putting into training and figuring it out. And if you've got this mismatched expectation, you go and you try it, and you know, this golden thing just doesn't work, it is discouraging. And you feel like, oh, I don't want to try something else. So yeah, John, I think this has been really interesting. I hope people can take some things away from it of how to think, how to plan. Broader than just kind of carbon endurance and precision fuel and hydration and pillar performance. But how do I think about fueling and putting together nutrition strategy as an athlete? And reaching out to the right people, which I know you and the team, it was so great to see a couple of your partners in the Race Village yesterday, none of them running themselves, but they're just to talk and be like, I had this like light bulb moment, somebody engaged and had a conversation with me, let me do that for someone else. I think that is such a great thing for the sport. Again, thank you for partnering with Trail Culture. I'm super excited for the journey ahead. And I think this is just a nice kind of frank and open discussion, and people can see why this partnership is going to work. I think early days when we first had a chat on the phone, something that I was like, I can work with this guy, is you were like, oh yeah, like influencers make it look like they just jump out of bed, take a gel and go to work. He's like, nobody does that. And I was like, great, we'll be able to work together.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole thing. Just be us, be yourselves. And I think us wanting to partner with you is that you're being you. This is, you know, before we turned on the camera, you know, this is you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, you know, sports and, you know, endurance sports need people to be comfortable with being themselves.
Yeah. You know? So that's cool.
We're looking forward to being part of it in a subtle you know, parts of your journey. And I think it's going to be fun.
And last question, this is totally off topic, but it's my kind of round out question for season two, is what have you read recently that's inspired you?
What have I read recently? You know what's funny? I've got quite bad with reading. So I've got a Kindle, which I've pulled out. Yeah. And I actually, it maybe sounds so bizarre that I haven't read it. Andre Agassi's autobiography.
Nice.
And I didn't really enjoy it because you always wonder how it's been manipulated.
Yeah.
And that was something that I read. And it's funny, it complements what we said, but it was just having someone say, like, you know, enjoying that journey is so important. I mean, Andre Agassi, when you read that book, I was like, sure, I really had no clue that this guy was so battling so many kind of demons.
Yeah.
And what I saw on the outside. And I think that speaks to nicely and how I'm thinking now is to say, yeah, it's, you know, it's your journey and you've got to find a way to enjoy it. Mm. And all the, whether it's coaches, performance individuals, etc., we should be here to help. And I hope that's something that I can, that's one of my little things that I want to, my legacy to leave, is to say, how do you help other people step up in different ways?
So cool. John, thanks for your time.
Cool, thank you.
Again, I'll have all the info in the show notes of where to find John and Carbon Endurance. And we will hopefully see you at, where will we find you next?
So the next event will most probably be Mossel Bay's 70.3 half Ironman. Mm.
Racing or just working?
Just working. I was one of those sad individuals that didn't make the entries.
Oh no.
Same with UTCT.
Oh yeah.
A race that I was really looking forward to. But so I think it's going to be a bit of head down now. We're growing as a business. So I think a little bit of let's make sure all the foundations are locked in.
Yeah.
And I'm going to enjoy a bit of training just for training's sake. So you'll see me as an individual probably on the race course towards the end of the year, and then as Carbon Endurance, I think, but towards the end, but then start of next year we'll be around.
Epic. Thanks so much, John. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
And we'll look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Chat soon.